Hello everyone, Jan here. So I decided to record this intro because we haven't released anything in a while, and I wanted to tell you guys why that is. So this episode has been re-recorded and re-edited like multiple times at this point. The first time we had mic issues and I lost half of the episode. The second time we recorded fine, but we had some serious editing issues, and then I had to also just completely redo my edit for it. So that's why this has taken so long to get to you. I think going forward, we should have much more, not consistent, but at least more regular releases of episodes, because now me and Kieran are again both in Wales, which means that we can both record in the same room, which will make stuff much easier and shouldn't present any more problems. We at some point said that we're gonna do as the next thing American Gods. We even say this at the end of this episode. That is no longer the case. We are not doing American Gods as our next podcast. Instead, we're gonna do The Ring, the Japanese Ring to the American Ring. We're gonna look at that adaption, which I think is gonna be fun. Why we decided to do that is mostly because we've grown sort of unexcited about doing the American Gods episode, and we decided that we're probably still going to do it someday, but we're going to give it a break and do it when we feel up to it, because when Kieran and me made Tomes and Talkies, we decided to only do stuff we are actually excited about doing. So, yeah. Anyway, enjoy the episode. There's still some light audio issues. You'll hear at points the mic give like slight crackles, and other like strange sounds. I've did my best to remove them all, but in some places you can still hear them if you're an audiophile like me. So I'm sorry for those of you out there who'll be annoyed by that, but we'll do our best so that next time it won't happen. Anyway, enjoy the episode and goodbye. Welcome to Tomes and Talkies. This week we are covering Watchmen, the comic book by Alan Moore and the film by Zack Snyder.
Is it Snyder or Schneider?
That is a very good question, Kieran, and I have no idea. Sitting across the pond from me is Kieran.
When you say across the pond, I believe that's the saying they use for...
Yeah, it's for France, Atlantic, technically, but it? You know.
Yeah, you're in Eastern
very
Europe,
far right? Across the pond from me.
Yeah, and most of mainland Europe.
Yeah. I mean, I could get to England by sea if I wanted to, so it's not technically incorrect.
I suppose, but anyway.
Anyway, we're not in the same room this time. That's the thing. I'm in Estonia. Kieran is in Essex, in England.
I've revealed my home.
Oh my god.
I'm gonna be found.
Yeah, because Essex is not at all a big place where it's easy to find people.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay, so Watchmen, Alan Moore. It's all about the those superheroes and
yeah.
Well,
no, only this is the thing. It's technically not, one it, superhero.
Okay, yes, that's a differentiation that's actually in this case very important to make as well.
Yeah, it is important. It's a deconstruction of the genre, but in some ways, it's still a good superhero story, even though it's a deconstruction. But
yeah, it is, and I think that's the because right off the bat we can say that the film adaptation is well, albeit visually faithful,
yeah.
It's not like it doesn't do the job that the Watchmen comic does.
No.
So, and I think that's one of the mistakes it makes, is it focuses just on that superhero storyline without getting everything else across.
Yeah, and also it focuses on... weirdly, Watchmen the movie is not a deconstruction of the superhero movie genre, as it's very much a superhero movie of a very traditional build, as in it has a lot of fight scenes and violence, which the book does not. I mean, it has like
a couple, but they're not.
It's not like concentrated on. It's not like 10 pages of a fight. It's every fight is short and brutal, and when
they're not superhero fights either. It's not action packed to like.
Yeah,
people beating each other up, usually.
Yeah, it's because like even, most of them are people.
Yeah, even the confrontation at the end where they fight Ozymandias for a little while is just like... It's pretty shitty on everyone's part.
Yeah,
they're just
it's
sort of
not cool.
Hitting each other and... Yeah, it's not... It's kind of just like... It's almost embarrassing to watch.
Yeah, exactly. And it's supposed to be. All of this is as it should be. Like, Alan Moore had a very specific vision, and in the comic you get it that like superheroes in real life would not work as they do in comics, which like these days is like kind of a passe thing to say, but like Alan Moore was one of the first people to say it. So
yeah, I think it's important to consider that Watchmen came out in the 1980s, so the understanding of superheroes then is very different to our understanding of superheroes now. Like we have the MCU now, and we see superheroes as this like very not real thing. This very like it's all about like superhero movies. Weirdly, now are about flawed people.
Yeah,
like they've
they
changed very much from what they were in the 80s now, because the MCU follows this idea that not everyone is perfect.
Yeah.
And they have to overcome their flaws to save the day rather than just be, like, fired tough bad guy.
Yeah, and not to say that Golden Age and Silver Age comic books didn't have flawed characters. It's more that...
Oh, yeah, no.
It was always clear that at the end of the day, the heroes would win. And the win wouldn't be bittersweet. It would be, like... It would just be a good... win.
They'd overcome the villain and save the world, and that'd be it. Yeah,
there wouldn't be no that sort of complexity. Where these days, like I don't know, if you take the Civil War movie, it's who was there the good guy and the villain, because
they're both heroes, right?
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. So it's there was no overcoming, and at the end, like people were just sad.
Yeah. So I think that's why Watchmen is so interesting, because it comes from this time where superheroes were very... The medium was a very simple one, and that's why people... Well, one of the reasons why people enjoyed it, because it was like a good fun action time.
And also no one like took superheroes seriously enough to do a deconstruction before that. So one thing to also remember is Alan Moore loved comics. It's not like...
Well, it's not like he's saying superheroes are lame and I hate them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he worked for DC for a long time, and these days he very much regrets it, but like at the time he was very much a person who
believed in the things he was writing and that superheroes were important. And this graphic novel made other people notice that, hey, superhero stories are not just like
good old-fashioned fun.
They also have yeah. something to say, and they can be important. And I'm sure if you asked Alan Moore, he could point to comics before he did it that did it for him.
Because that's I mean, that's the nature of all creative writing, really, isn't it? Is that there is that kind of, you know, inspiration or
yeah,
whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, he probably took inspiration from something that we don't even know these days, because, you know.
I mean, that's just the case of any kind of, like, yeah. writing. You know, what was big in the 1800s, you know, fucking I can tell you.
I mean, we probably could, but, you know.
Okay, sure, some of it maybe, but some of it...
Yeah, yeah,
also...
but we could, like, I probably couldn't tell you what directly inspired Hemingway or what directly inspired... Jane Austen, or well, I could with Jane.
Well, to a degree, Jane Austen, yeah, you could, but yeah, sure, but like, Hemingway.
Then again, we don't. This is one of the things about being an author, I guess. Also, it's people sometimes do ask you about your inspirations, and you can say them, but it's not written at the front flap of your book that, hey, this book was inspired by these works. So,
yeah.
Because of that, author inspiration is only. You know it only if you do research on it. I tried to actually find out about this book and Alan Moore, but these days he doesn't like to talk about it as much. Because
I mean, he's a weird... Yeah, he's just like a weird, strange man.
He is a weird man, but also he these days he kind of hates most of the works he's done for DC, because DC took all the rights from him. And sold them for other people to make movies from, and
yep,
because of
like
that,
Zack Snyder,
yeah, and because of that, he doesn't really like or respect the comic book industry anymore. And I haven't seen any recent interviews with him about like Watchmen and stuff that were like positive. He's every time he's been like, "Fuck these people." They took my work.
Poor Alan.
Yeah.
Poor Alan. But when he was writing it, we enjoyed it, didn't we?
Yeah,
we thought
did.
It was nice.
Yeah.
So we've established it's a deconstruction of the superhero genre.
Yes,
and I would say it does that mainly by emphasizing that each of the heroes that you follow are people before they're like
yeah,
superheroes,
and also not even necessarily that good people.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like people in the real world, you know, no one's perfect. Everyone has flaws, and this the Watchmen highlights those flaws.
Yeah. Watchmen
and says
brings
that,
the
like,
flaws to the fore.
Yeah, so it's not saying that these people are bad people either.
No.
It's saying that these they're saying that these are normal people who are doing this thing, and so they, you know, they can have this belief in doing something good, but because they're flawed, at the end of the day, it gets in the way of everything. And
yeah, exactly. It's
yeah,
it's a very human story, like all great writing. It's not about necessarily the idea of a superhero, even though in some ways it says it is about that. It's more about, I think, the idea of people being superheroes.
Yeah, like real ones.
Yeah,
like real
exactly.
people.
Like
I mean, you know, one of the first things you see is Edward Blake the comedian going to like rape someone, and like that's
yep.
That's an ultimately, unfortunately, it's a very human thing. Like that.
Yeah,
that...
it's not. Yeah. It reminds you that rape is not necessarily done by monsters; it's done by humans. Which, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things that brings you back into the real world. Essentially, I think.
Yeah. Rorschach as the almost Batman-like
protagonist.
Yeah,
like the one that you're following.
Yeah, if these heroes were grafted onto like other superheroes, then I think Rorschach would be the Batman and Dr. Manhattan would be the Superman. As in, one of them is like the traditional version of, you know, someone with powers who can literally do anything. And like, yeah. Rorschach is vigilante justice. But Rorschach, compared to Batman, is the truth of vigilante justice, which is...
Yeah, someone who's like...
breaks fingers.
Yeah, someone like, who's actually a really fucking horrible person.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, and
Rorschach is so unlikable as, yeah. like, a person. He's, like, he's such a horrible, just shitty dude.
Who has no empathy for the criminals he fights.
He doesn't have empathy for even the people he saves. He's just like a fucked up dude. I mean, and like, to be fair to him, you know, he had like a really, you know, he has had like a shitty upbringing. So I understand that. But like, still, you wouldn't want that person the police force. So why would you want them as a vigilante?
Yeah, exactly. And like the way he talks about the city, like, that's one of the first, like, I think that is
it's
one of
the very
first of...
it's on the very first page.
Yeah,
he says on panel 3 is the accumulated filth of all their sex and murder will foam up about their waists, and all the whores and politicians will look up and shout save us, and I'll look down and whisper no.
Yeah,
and that's panel 3.
That's panel 3
of the first page.
Yeah, and like, that's such a that sets a tone.
Yeah, like, it's interesting that Watchmen is associated as this, you know, really dark and gritty story. I never really interpreted it that way, because visually, the darkest scenes are particularly Rorschach's ones.
Yeah.
I always saw it as, like,
no,
the city is not as bad as he seems to think it is.
Yeah, no, because we spend time with those characters in the city. Like, that's one of the things that the movie cut, is that black boy and that lesbian woman and the guy who sells
the papers.
Like, and those people, they're not, like, also, again, perfect, but, like, they are also much more...
They're just good. They're just not even necessarily good, but they're just people, And they're not, not really flawed. They are flawed, as is everyone, but again, but they're just people.
They're not, like...
It's not this hive of villainy and scum like Rorschach seems to think it is.
No, it's definitely not.
I mean, in that very last scene in the graphic novel when the alien whatever shows up, the seller jumps on the comic reader to like try and save him.
Yep.
Like, in that very last scene, it's like a... And also when I think the lesbians are fighting, like, people go to, like, break up the fight.
Yeah.
And, like, it's this, you know, they are all looking after each other, and...
When worst comes to worst, they see each other as human. Like, they don't...
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, Watchmen has so much to say about humanity in general, because, like, Dr. Manhattan is very not human anymore. That's, like, one of his main characteristics at this point.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the way Rorschach is like, this realistic Batman. Dr. Manhattan is this realistic Superman. In that you can't have someone who is so ultimately powerful, because that takes away all of their humanity.
Yes. It's,
like, the way Dr. Manhattan just doesn't understand humans anymore, and he doesn't understand that the same social aspect or understanding of emotion is what Superman would actually be like. Because Superman, very conveniently, you know, has the exact same worldly understanding as everyone else.
Yeah.
And he's literally an alien as well.
Literally an alien. Yeah.
So he should almost be even worse off than Dr. Manhattan. But, like, that's the...
Yeah, but he was... I suppose the key difference there was, like, Dr. Manhattan got his powers through, like, an accident where Superman was born as an alien but raised as by humans.
You raised as a human, yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess you could argue that, you know, if you raise a superhuman as a human, they'll be grub fine. But
yeah, no,
I don't know.
But ooh, no, but
there's no way to actually know that.
Yeah, yeah, and also like what Watchmen says is that, nah.
Yeah, like, Watchmen doesn't believe you can do that. I think that they're the main two deconstructions. You and then you also have Night Owl, who is similar to Batman in how he's actually a superhero. You know, this like person with this suit and all these gadgets and stuff like that. But in the movie in particular, he's definitely like inspired by Batman in that, because they actually give him this is one of like the first problems of the movie, is that they actually give him like a really cool costume in the movie and they make him look totally badass, but in the comic book he looks like a fucking idiot.
He does.
Like, and like at the end when him and Rorschach are going to find Ozymandias, and he's like, oh, let me get my winter coat out, and it's just a white version of his number one, and it just looks really stupid.
It does. I guess in that way also Night Owl is also kind of Batman, but I think Night Owl for me is more the original Night Owl is actually probably because he was the policeman turned
superhero. Hollis Mason, yeah.
We have to remember this was written in the 80s in a lot of ways, because this is of its era, especially about when it comes to like Cold War stuff and the way
treats the
police
Russia
and stuff.
Because
like it's very disappointed with governments, and I don't know, for a lack of a better word, the man. Because that's why the original Night Owl becomes a superhero, is because like, oh, the police force can't do literally anything, so I guess I'll become a superhero.
Okay, yeah. So the graphic novel's pretty good. We've established. We like it.
Yeah.
So, what does the film do wrong, Jan? What do you think, or what does it do right? First of all, let's start with that. Because we have already established it does a lot more wrong than it does right.
Yes, I think it carries over a lot of the panels really well. Like a lot of the shots are very similar to the comic.
Visually, it's such a faithful adaptation. Like even like the script is, and which is obviously not visual, but you know what I mean. Like it's a very
and most like costumes are also like well done.
Yeah, and like even some of the cast, like I mean, when you see Rorschach, they pulled him literally from the fucking pages. The guy looks exactly the same.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's actually kind of weird.
It is weird. It's honestly like if it was like the other way around, it would be Uncanny Valley.
Yeah.
It would be exactly. Like, how did they draw this man so perfectly in a different art style?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think the guy that plays Rorschach does a fine job of it, but like the shining performance
comedian
from actors. Yeah, it's definitely what the fuck is his name? Hang on. I've got it right next to me. Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Yes.
As the comedian. Who, you know, nowadays is in The Walking Dead, and everyone loves him as Negan in that. So, well done, Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Everyone loves you, including us here at Tomes and Talkies. He's just like, he seems like the only like actor who understands that it's not just like a superhero thing. Because he could have played the comedian as this really cool, edgy, funny kind of guy. But he doesn't. He plays him in this kind of like almost half-assed way, which is kind of like what the comedian is like. And he's like, you know, there's nothing we can do about it, so let's just laugh at it. And that's Jeffrey Dean Morgan as a comedian feels right.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That, for that reason.
Yeah, like we'll get to the acting when it comes to the bad, but like he was definitely good. What else was good?
That might be it, I think.
I guess like the like this is again about the visuals, I guess, but like it was cool to see a lot of the visual, like some of the visual effects are really good. in it.
Works as like a superhero story because it's done perfectly. Like,
yeah, you'd think like that, like, what is it? It came out in 2009, so pretty old movie at this point when it comes to visual effects would show its age, but I don't think it has.
No, it could have, you know, it could have been released a couple of years ago. Like, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it still works.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't feel like it's nearly a decade old.
No.
So kudos to them for that. So okay, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Some people I know like the change from the alien to Dr. Manhattan as the
I don't.
The but... sort of catastrophic, yeah. I'm personally not sure on it because it like as a superhero story, I think it works.
Yeah.
But again, it's not one, so...
I don't think it was... Putting it as Dr. Manhattan changes the story, I think. The alien is... When you use the alien for it, it's much more... Basically, what the alien is saying about us is the only reason we'd come together to fight something greater is if... truly something otherworldly would come down at us. And the movie is saying, oh, Dr. Manhattan now is so otherworldly that he can be
the alien.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know if
I think my issue with that is there's a lot of almost story continuity that could make that would basically mean that Ozymandias' plan doesn't work properly because they've picked Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah, like, exactly.
For example, the Russians could very easily go, well, maybe you set this up on purpose.
Yeah, exactly. like they could tell the US, hey, the fuck, man?
Yeah, they'd be like, we don't believe this. So.
Yeah, yeah. They could, like, I could see very easily, like, conspiracy theories, like being believed.
But
like,
Bush did Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah, or Nixon. But absolutely. I think it would be very easy because it's anyone could look at Dr. Manhattan's history and very quickly go, well, the whole thing's been orchestrated.
Yeah, but
it would be pretty easy to work that one out. I think
this alien is like kind of a like.
It's supposed to be weird and out of nowhere.
Yeah, like,
exactly. That's super intentional. You're supposed to read it and go, oh, okay.
But at the same time, it's, like, been built up. Like, it doesn't... Like, if you look at... Like, when you reread it, like, that's one of the things I notice. With, like, because I've reread it twice now for this... Because, listeners, you might not know, but this is the second time we're recording this.
Yeah, it went... It went all a bit pear-shaped.
Yes, it did. But anyway, because I've reread it twice now, the thing I noticed is, like, it is foreshadowed. It's not like...
Oh, yeah. I mean they make a point of saying, like, the artist that worked on the Black Freighter goes missing and weird stuff like that.
Yeah. And, like, all the island stuff that you see in between... That's why I think the alien works better also, is because it's much more built up than Dr. Manhattan is as the...
All you see in the movie is the fact that the comedian has been murdered. So Rorschach's idea of, like, you know, someone trying to take out the superhero seems a lot more plausible, whereas in the comic, I think you quickly realise he's just wrong.
Yeah, he is wrong.
You quickly just realize he's just he's just wrong about it.
He's looking for an excuse to, you know,
have them all be superheroes again because that's all he wants.
Yeah, because he's lonely.
Yeah, he's a lonely boy.
He's not like that again. Like Rorschach might be in some ways like the most fucked up, the most cool, and the most like reprehensible. All in the same, like, package.
Yeah, honestly, probably.
Like, you feel for him because he does feel like a lonely man who has nothing better to do than be this number one. In his day job is being a doomsday man who walks around with a sign that says the end is nigh. And then at night he's Rorschach, who just beats up criminals and like.
He doesn't even beat some of them. He kills a lot of them.
Yeah,
as well.
He like, just kills really, them. Like, yeah.
He's
yeah,
like yeah. a really morally questionable hero in that sense anyway. Yeah. I love it when Batman does that. Yeah. I love it when Batman gets a gun and
I love it in
down.
Batman v Superman where
oh he does exactly that doesn't he and some of the deaths are really fucked up as
yeah
well.
no that's
like he reverses okay. his car and like slams a guy
yeah
against
no
the wall.
That's the thing I think Zack Snyder was having since seen Batman v Superman I think he thought that, like, what Rorschach is doing is good and cool. Like, yeah, you should kill people. All these dirty criminals, yeah, you should kill them. But, like, nah.
I think it's so strange when you know what, there's no point in me talking about Batman vs Superman because it's really off the point. So never mind.
Yeah.
I'm good. Let's
ignore that. It is to the point in that it shows that why, in some ways, Batman v Superman helps to show why Watchmen as a movie doesn't work. Because Zack Snyder, although he loves comics, doesn't seem to understand them.
Yeah, I completely agree. He's like, too, like...
he doesn't get Superman, he doesn't get Batman. He thinks he gets them.
He's obsessed with the kind of action side of everything. Like, the way to make the correct Superman story is not to say, oh, will he be able to beat the villain? Because we know he will. He's Superman.
Yeah, he's
but
Superman.
Should he beat the villain? Or will beating the villain jeopardize his morals? Which he tried to do in Man of Steel, but it was such... Like, at the end, when he has to kill General Zod, oh no, he's going to zap that family. It's like in the cheesiest, like...
Yeah, exactly.
...scene ever. It's so... It's really awkward,
and
that's the only
exactly.
time
and
where
he
they...
doesn't... That's not what Superman is about. It like, Superman is very much about being...
A god amongst people.
And what that means...
And you know, Alan Moore gets the right with the writing of Dr. Manhattan. Like, he shows how alien he is by the fact that Dr. Manhattan makes out with a fucking 14-year-old. And
yeah,
he's like,
because...
Oh, she's cute, but because he's lost all,
and
social and perceptive understanding of sexuality and age.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and to be clear...
He's not like an evil paedophile.
Yeah, he's not saying that Dr. Manhattan is a paedophile. What it's saying is that Dr. Manhattan doesn't understand humanity anymore because it's like...
Yeah, he's literally outside of time, so his understanding of age is like... is this out the fucking window?
Yeah, to him, literally, age is a number.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't get it anymore. Like, he's like he thinks in geological time at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's... I don't blame them for removing the fact that he gets with Thingy when she's 14, Laurie when she's 14.
Yeah.
But also, it's kind of important because he is just like perfect in the movie.
In some ways, it's like all these little tiny changes. You would think that otherwise, this movie is so faithful, but all these tiny changes make huge differences here. That's why I think the best way to have done Watchmen would have been to deviate from the source material. Maybe make...
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe make it more like the modern deconstruction of superhero movies. Because at that point, although the Marvel movies hadn't gotten going quite as much as they have
I
now...
I mean, Iron Man 1 is out at that point, right?
I think so.
The MCU is technically started. Let me have a quick
kind
Google
of.
It. Yeah, it's not the MCU like we know.
Iron Man was 2008, so it was
okay.
Like,
yeah, so it's just come out.
It just had come out, but it's still like all the X-Men were out by that point, and all the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, and like there would have been enough material to do a deconstruction of a superhero movie, because by that point there had become a sort of
a standard.
Yeah, not a formula, yeah. But a standard at least.
I think yeah, like you said, that's the problem is that it's too faithful.
Yeah, it is.
Because Watchmen gets across what it's trying to say because it is such an it's written like a superhero comic. It's a perfect example of a graphic novel. Novel.
Yeah.
In that sense. And like
it uses its mediums to its advantage.
Yeah, exactly.
One thing we haven't mentioned that I think is very important is the art of
Dave Gibbons.
Yeah, Dave Gibbons, and the color of
John Higgins
is like it adds a lot.
Oh, it does. It's so because to us now everyone looks really silly, basically, that works again because it's that. Yeah. Idea of the
no, and also it looks like colorful and 80s, which one thing that the Zack Snyder's version doesn't quite get across is how colorful this comic book is.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, again, Zack Snyder seems to agree with Rorschach that everything's really dirty and horrible, and he makes it a really visually dark film. I don't know how many times he uses rain as pathetic fallacy to go, yeah. Oh yeah, it's miserable. It's like, dude, come on.
Yeah,
it's not that deep, bro.
Yeah, whereas you know? Like there's a lot of reds and yellows and purples and blues, and
it's such a bright graphic novel. I mean, it uses that perfect shade of black a lot to show the light.
Yeah,
but I think that's just again that's just like a general comic thing.
Yeah, it uses light in a very smart way a lot of the times. If you go to how to do this. In my version, it's page 20, but because I'm reading online, I don't know what version, what it is in yours. Anyway, where Rorschach talks to Ozymandias for the first time, there's this, like, the first panel on that page is them in very clear, like, shadow. Oh, sorry, it's the second page of them talking. Sorry.
Oh, was that with them up against the window?
Yeah. Rorschach, I know we're never friends, but even so, you're being unfair.
Yeah,
that one. Like, look at the light in that. It's like...
Oh, it's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, the window is just white, and it works so well.
Yeah. It's beautiful art, but even aside from its beauty, it's like, just well done.
Yeah, it again, like you say, it's clever.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, like, we don't have, like, that much good to say of Zack Snyder's work, because I think
everything
one of the,
that's good in that is just from straight the comic. Up good from the comic, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So, to backtrack a little bit, speaking about Ozymandias...
Yes.
He is one of my biggest gripes with the film. Like...
Looks too young.
Like, Ozymandias is supposed to be this like beautiful, like, you know, he's supposed to look like those Roman statues, yeah. Right? Like where they're like the men are like beautiful, yeah. not like oh he's sexy, but like actually beautiful. Like, he's supposed like to look like a work of he's supposed to look like a work of art. And who do they hire to play him? They hire a twink. They've just got some shit little. Skinny dickhead with some shit side fringe just looking like shit, and he straight away you look at him and go, oh, he's a villain. he straight away you can go, oh yeah, he's the bad guy, and he is just a bad guy in the film as well.
There's
like none of the sort of moral complexity to
him. Movie tells you like the thing he did was wrong. Whereas the comic is like it was pretty bad, but, like, world peace, though.
Yeah, exactly. Like, And also, and even then, it shows you that he's unsure of it at the end when he says to Dr. Manhattan, "Did I do the right thing?" And then he's like, "There is no right thing." And then he's like, "Oh shit!" And that's the last time you see him.
Yeah, because this was written while the Cold War was still very much a thing. Ending the Cold War and being paranoid about the Cold War and being paranoid that you might get a bomb dropped on you any second now really comes across in this. Whereas in the movie, it doesn't. Like, it's like, because the movie...
They kind of forget about it. I feel like they kind of forget about it.
Yeah, because the movie knows how things turn out, because... Whereas Alan Moore didn't.
Yeah, I mean, they very nearly did come to that kind of, horrible end.
Yeah.
Another casting choice that I don't like, I don't think you have as...
Wait, let's go briefly go back to Ozymandias. One thing I wanted to say that if we're doing... heroes and what they would be in other comics, then this is the Iron Man sort of fantasy of
being totally.
The billionaire who can create technology.
Almost do anything because of his money.
Yeah. That's like Ozymandias is that done in a complex way. Yeah.
It shows you that, while not being the god that Dr. Manhattan is, he has the god complex.
Yes, exactly.
He even has the great monologue at the end where he goes on about, loving Alexander the Great and, this idea of taking it upon himself to, save the world.
Yeah, exactly. Self-made man and all that thing. Yeah. Anyway, continue on.
Yeah, it's fucking great.
It is great.
Yeah. My next casting choice I didn't like is Dr. Manhattan. So that's a weird one because visually, again, he's literally perfect. So I don't have a problem with that. It's his voice. His voice is not godlike enough. He's too soft-spoken, I think, and too almost high-pitched, I think. I imagined him to have a bit more of a deep sort of handsome voice.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't feel all powerful, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's because of his voice, which I know is a really small complaint. So
yeah, I don't
beat me up for that.
I don't particularly I don't mind, honestly. I didn't mind that much.
Yeah, I remember you saying you didn't mind as much as I did. But it really bugged me.
We can disagree. You can think Billy... Crudup.
Crudup?
Crudup. Crudup.
Crudup.
Crudup.
Yeah, whatever his name is. I just think... I just don't think his voice is right for it. I don't know. I just feel like he didn't have the right impact. And also... Dr. Manhattan has one of the coolest, one of my favorite scenes in the whole graphic novel is the Mars sequence.
Yeah.
When he first goes there, and it's so... And the way it's drawn, again, it shows you how outside of time he is. The way it flashes back and forth between him on Mars, the stuff happening in the background, and then it goes back and shows you stuff he's already done and he's already talked about, and it just keeps going back and forth.
Yeah.
And that's so good. Mm-hmm. And then in the movie it fucking sucks. It just doesn't work. Because you can't visualize that the same way.
No, exactly, because on the page it works much better. Whereas you'd have to do a very you'd have to make almost Dadaist or you'd have to make one part of the movie be very surreal and strange and Dadaist and leave the rest normal, and I don't think audiences would be okay with that, or not be okay with that, but not it would be hard to convey
I mean, the film was marketed as like a mainstream superhero movie, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So it wouldn't work in that sense. Like, you can have those kind of surreal out of movie experiences, because Tarantino shows that in like Kill Bill 1 when you have the animated sequence, and it's totally out of it, and it's great because it works. But it doesn't. You couldn't get away with that with Watchmen unless film was this.
You couldn't
this,
get away with it.
Was marketed in this different way.
Yeah, exactly. You couldn't get away with it if you went to see, I don't know, for Ragnarok, and it had that scene in it, like, had a weird, like time-skipping
claymation, engine. Yeah.
It just wouldn't work. I would be weirded out and surprised, even though, like, because, not that marketing is everything, but, like, marketing does matter. Setting up audience expectations is, like, an important thing. And Watchmen the comic, like, it's the only graphic novel that's, like, on, like, best books of all time lists.
Because it wasn't marketed like a normal superhero thing, because it's not.
Exactly. Alan Moore was allowed to experiment with it. Like, because, nothing like it was done before that. Well, probably there was stuff like it that Alan Moore could point to, but there's nothing that was mainstream. Like, nothing that was...
Nothing as big as Watchmen is now.
Yeah. Nothing that has crossed over good old Alan.
Alan Moore's a fine man, but Zack Snyder should probably stop directing, I feel. That's just my opinion. Because another thing I don't like about the Watchmen movie, 2009, directed by Zack Snyder, is the soundtrack. They're so... So I like that it's kind of got a lot of weird stuff in there. I like that it's a bit of a weird soundtrack. You've got Jimi Hendrix, you've got classical music, Nina Simone, Nat King Cole, My Chemical Romance. This soundtrack is all over the place, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, every song is used in the worst possible way.
Yeah.
So they play Ride of the Valkyries, right?
Yeah.
But they play the song Ride of the Valkyries when Dr. Manhattan is blowing up Vietnamese people.
No, again, and it's like...
It's almost glorifying it. It feels like it's glorifying this,
no,
like...
And also, every choice is the most obvious choice.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, that aside, though, like, you're not supposed to look at Dr. Manhattan in Vietnam and go, oh, yeah, look how cool he is.
Yeah.
Like, you're supposed to look at him and go,
oof.
This is, like... It's almost the equivalent of when they dropped the nuclear bombs in Japan. This idea of just like this completely unstoppable, destructive force, literally, and he literally blows them up just with his mind, and that's fucking terrible. And then it's like, and it's just making it look really great, and it's not. Yeah. It's horrible.
Yeah, it's literally murder.
it's. Cold-blooded, destructive, explosive, gory murder. It's horrible. It's really fucked up. And then Zack Snyder's like, this is great. I love this.
Yeah.
And then, again, like you said, there are all the really obvious choices. He has All Along the Watchtower by Jimi Hendrix, which is, you know, it's used in every movie ever anyway. And the only reason it's used in this movie is because there's one line that says there's two riders that were approaching and the wind began to howl, and that's it. That's the only reason he used that song.
And also, like even though I liked it, because not enough movies use that Bob Dylan song, like The Times They Are Changing, it was used in the most obvious way. It was used for showing times that were changing.
Oh, it's so...
Like, every choice that is made is, like, the most obvious choice. Like, if I was, hey, Jan, tell me what would be the most obvious song to go here. I could, like...
You could have picked out the soundtrack yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
absolutely. And when they, oh my god, the sex scene between, Laurie and Dan is—it's actually funny, like it's actually fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Because I looked this up, right? So they play Hallelujah, right? Which is like hilarious anyway. But yeah. I looked it up, and that was actually the second choice for the song they wanted to play there. Because the first song he thought, Zach Schneider thought the first song was too romantic and too sexy, because he's aware that that scene is supposed to be ironic.
Uh-huh.
Right? So he picked Hallelujah, which is just as, like, stupid as his first choice.
What was the first choice?
Let me check. Okay, it was Night Owl and Silk Spectre's sex scene about the owl chip is set to the tune of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah. Originally, Zack Schneider used a recording of the song by Alison Krauss. Oh, okay, no, it was still Hallelujah, but it was by Alison Krauss.
Oh, yeah. It's the different version. Yeah. I know the Alison Krauss version.
But decided Krauss' version was too romantic and too sexy for a scene that is intended to come across as ironic and ridiculous. I mean, to be fair, it does come across as ironic and ridiculous.
I didn't know it was it. Why? Yeah, I guess.
Because it's you know, it's this idea that Dan was struggling to get up, but being a superhero helps him get a boner, and that's fucking stupid. That's really funny.
Yeah.
But, like, it is ironic. It is funny watching it in the film, but I feel like it's...
Yeah, it's the different... It's not...
It's for the wrong reason,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's like, it just... It doesn't make seem the sex scene awkward in the right way. It seems like...
It feels awkward because she's genuinely enjoying getting boned by this guy who's got masculinity problems.
And also, like, the actors look like not that they should look like they're enjoying themselves, but they look like they're at work. I don't know how to explain it. They look like, this is what we're doing now, I guess.
Yeah, it's just so... It's so cheesy and bad.
It just doesn't look good.
I think Laurie is really boring in the film.
Oh, Laurie, like, is the worst. Like, Zack Schneider can't direct actors anyway, but, like, Laurie is the worst one.
But he didn't get a great actress to play her. Like, she's just... let me check. I have this one on my notes.
Malina Ackerman.
Malin. Yeah.
It's Malin. Yeah, it's Malin. Yeah, you're right.
But she, Malin? Like, the whole... I don't know, man. It doesn't matter.
It's true.
Like the whole scene where she finds out that the comedian's her dad on Mars is fucking great, because it's this moment where Dr. Manhattan finally understands that he appreciates life as this third person thing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But in the film, they skip like all of it, and they're just like, "Wow, he's your dad. That's amazing." That's it.
And she doesn't even react. Like,
no, and then she quickly forgets about it, and just quickly, and that's it. And like the whole idea that that her dad is a comedian because Sally Jupiter goes back to the comedian, you know, it reinforces the idea that all these like superheroes were just people in the end anyway, because it's heartbreaking, right?
Yeah.
That the comedian's her dad, because that it's heartbreaking to think that Sally would go back to someone who hurt her like that. But that's what happens. Some people do go back to people that have hurt them, and the comic makes that feel real.
Yeah, exactly. Like in the comic, the scene where Laurie confronts him about the rape is also one of the most, like, he looks like his face, and like, oh, it's like,
because he looks like he looks like weirdly heartbroken, doesn't he? Such a strange, oh, it's so clever.
Yeah, exactly. It's like he's almost sad that she doesn't think of it's so gross and good.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason Alan Moore disowns all film adaptations.
Yeah. That's a... you know. But I think, honestly, that's... They're my main things. The absolute... Oh, actually, no, you know what is really important to talk about?
Mm-hmm.
So, in the theatrical release, they cut the Black Freighter stuff.
Yeah, they did. I forgot that the biggest...
Yeah, I was going to say, because I know you love the Black Freighter. Yeah, you love the Black Freighter.
That's like one
stuff,
of the... For me, it's one of the more important parts, honestly, because I think cutting it is the right choice for the movie.
If the movie was to be how it was.
Yeah, Exactly.
If they had made the movie in a completely different way, you could have had this, you know, parallel storyline with the Black Freighter stuff and the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been great.
Yeah, but like, I know a lot of comic readers these days don't like the Black Freighter stuff, and I also understand that in some ways. They say it's the stop in the rat narrative. But because that story is a very important side story. Like it's almost,
it's a perfect parallel, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like it lays out the what Watchmen is about, almost. Like that Black Freighter story is very important to the thing for me, and like it's also very well written, I think. Alan Moore writes it well too.
Yeah, his writing in general is just great. Like if he ever it would never happen, but if they ever released like Under the Hood by Hollis Mason as like a whole book, I'd snatch that up.
Yeah.
like the prose in that is really, really good.
Yes,
like
he's
as that kind of
good writer. Like,
yeah, he is.
For real.
Genuinely like a really good writer. And it's one of the reasons why Watchmen appears on like the best novels, because it's not just considered like some cool comic book. It's considered a novel, like an actual novel, which is great, because it's just as good and as like meaningful as
it is.
I don't know. It's a piece of literature.
It is. It's full of Alan Moore also knows his literature and classic literature very well. You can tell that by most of the other things he's written, like, for example, V for Vendetta and like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen are all about the fact that like he knows his literature very well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Extraordinary Gentlemen literally has like,
yeah, classic literary
all those Victorian heroes.
Yeah, exactly. Good writer.
Yeah. Love him.
Love that boy.
Yeah, the Black Freighter, understandable why it was cut, but it shouldn't have been cut because they could have made such a better film in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, I thought that since they are making a TV series now...
I completely forgot about that.
I'll be interested to see what they're gonna do, because I think in some ways, if I had done Watchmen, if for some reason 12-year-old me was approached and said, hey, wanna do Watchmen, one of the things I'd straight up change was I wouldn't have made it a movie, because
movies are too, especially because it's superhero, it immediately comes off as too grand.
Yeah, and both comic books and TV series are serialized, and you could do the serialization much better in a TV show.
Oh, they shouldn't, but you could literally do it like chapter per episode sort of thing.
Yeah, you should. That's not how you should do it, but yes.
Exactly. Hypothetically, you could.
Yes, you could. You definitely could. This is the thing we talk about. We're gonna talk about often. It's the fact that movies and books and comic books and everything, all of these mediums are very different. So when you adapt, changing things is not always a bad idea. One of the reasons, like, I think a lot of people prefer the Lord of the Rings movies to the books is the fact that it changes a lot.
Yeah, it's the medium has to accommodate.
Yeah,
like, and that's why, although Watchmen is the movie is such a visual, like, faithful adaptation, it doesn't work because of that reason.
And also, you can always go too far in the other direction and change too much, but on the whole, I think change is something to be embraced when you're adapting from one medium to another, and especially where the two mediums are very different, because I think in a lot of ways, even though these days comic book movies are so normalized. I think why they are so normalized is the fact that these days the movies and the comic books are very different. Like, they're not. Nobody tries to make them the same.
If we talk about the MCU, it's clearly the whole way that story, the whole overarching story, has been written, has been rewritten to accommodate to be filmed. And that's why they're so successful, because they're not told like comic book stories anymore. They're told like film stories, and that's fine. They might not fit everything in that the comics did, but yeah, that's why these films have been very successful, and that's why people enjoy them so much.
Yeah.
Barring like the comic book elitists that, you know, don't enjoy anything.
Mm-hmm. There are always one medium elitist. Like, we'll never say a book can be better than a movie because they think books are inherently better, but that's not necessarily the case.
Yes.
I think not. Civil War the movie is much better than Civil War the comic, which is kind of a mess.
I see that's the one that I've heard the opposite with. I heard that people really like the graphic novel because it's got so many more characters in it.
Oh yeah, it has more characters, which
but it's also one of those things,
it's a fucking mess also.
Yeah, it's also one of those things that if they put all of them in, each hero would have got like 2 minutes of screen time, and that would have been really shit, so.
Yeah, no, I don't like Civil War the comic. Anyway, but that's a topic for another day, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. I'm, as you know, I'm just not into Marvel or anything. Like, I know about them, but that's like about it. That's about as far as my knowledge on the topic goes.
Can we briefly talk about Alan Moore's own, like? Because I want to read you a quote of what Alan Moore said about the worst case scenario of this movie that Zack Snyder presented. Because I found, like, again, I was researching before, and one trivia thing I found on IMDb made me really laugh, because it was like, it for me, it like sort of epitomized the relationship between Zack Snyder and Alan in some ways.
So anyway,
Zack Snyder was being interviewed for something or another, and like he said about like what the worst case scenario of like Alan seeing the movie could be, and he said like, worst case scenario, Alan puts the movie on his DVD player on a cold Sunday in London and watches and says, yeah, that doesn't suck too bad. Now, that's the quote. And then this was brought up to Alan Moore in some other interview at some other point. I really love his response. That's right. The worst case scenario. I think he's underestimated what the worst case scenario would be. And then there's a pause. Then he said, that's never going to happen in my DVD player in London. And then brackets, Moore very famously lives in Northampton. I'm never going to watch the fucking thing.
Oh my god, I love that. I love that also the worst case scenario isn't even that him just going, I hate this.
It's, like that's not too
he's
bad.
Like, yeah, he's like, worst case scenario, like like Alan Moore likes the movie a little bit.
Yeah, worst case scenario, he's like, ah, this is fine.
And then in real life, he's like, fuck you. Yeah. I hate you and your shit film. Get fucked.
Yeah, it's good. And I also love that, like
it Zack points Snyder out that he even gets where he, like, where he lives wrong.
Yeah. That's great. Though weirdly, I would like to know what Alan Moore thinks of the movie. Like, I would like to see, like, for him to see it. Like,
we should get him as a guest on here and get him to listen to this episode, and then he's gonna like rip us apart and be like, you've completely misunderstood the comic.
Yeah.
And he's just gonna be like, fuck you two. I hate Estonia.
Like, I mean, I'm sure we haven't gotten the comic in all of its glory, because I looked on Google Scholar and there are like a lot of important literary articles written about it, so, you know.
I'm sure.
We've just
read it and watched the film and gone, this is what we like and what we don't like, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And we've done like a very surface like analysis of the graphic novel as well. I mean, there's so much you could talk about with it that we didn't, but
There is like this is a like unlike Harry Potter 1, this is a deep novel.
Absolutely.
Like you could dive into the characters themselves. We could make a half an hour podcast about each of the separate characters on their own.
Yeah, exactly. Like, because each one has like a clear issue, but then you could talk about that issue and how it plays into literally everything they do.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
just and then you've got like talking about how the drawing of all of that affects everything. The way Dan slumps is like a good example of just how he's miserable and how he's got a masculinity problem. Like the fact that he dresses up sometimes, like, you know, it's everything. There's so much to say. So yeah.
I love that in the comic book, the romance is presented as super weird, uncomfortable, but in like a very different way than in the movie, because in the movie it feels almost, doesn't feel like a fact of the fiction, it more feels like a fact of these two actors are bad actors and they can't deliver these lines well.
Yeah, that's exactly what it feels like. It just feels like it's a mess and it's wrong, basically.
Yeah, this is not I think we haven't quite hit this point in enough. This isn't that well acted of a movie.
Yeah.
Like, Zack Snyder doesn't know how to direct actors. He knows how to direct
visuals.
Like, visuals. Actors, that's a different story.
I think this is ironically why I think we liked Jeffrey Dean Morgan as the comedian, because the way the comedian's whole point in is that he understands like what's going on, but doesn't like care. Mm. And like that's kind of what it feels like with Jeffrey Dean Morgan. He seems to be the only actor that kind of gets it and plays his role accordingly.
Yeah, and like I've heard that like why Zack Snyder chose him was because everyone else during casting was like too well groomed and nice with him, whereas Jeffrey Dean Morgan was like apparently very grumpy in the casting meeting.
That's great.
So, like, again, probably the reason for... But, like, I don't think that the guy who played... the guy who played Rorschach did a really good job also. But, like, everyone else, I don't think did well.
They're just uninspiring, aren't they? Yeah. They're just not... They feel like very one-dimensional kind of shadows of their... of their own selves.
Yeah. And you know, like Patrick Wilson, I've seen in other things, and I know he's not a bad actor, but I genuinely do think, like...
His performance in this is not good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably the fact of...
A bad director and a bad... Like, a bad script in a lot of places. Like, like when he goes out as when Rorschach dies, and he's just like, no! It's
also...
That's a stupid... like addition to make him go out there as well.
No, that's like, thanks for reminding me, that's like one of the worst decisions I think in the, like that changes the narrative, like, because Rorschach dies alone in the comic with Dr. Manhattan.
That's what he's all about. He's killed by this like this alien who doesn't understand, and the point is that Dan's not there because he's, you know, he's off, you know, taking comfort in this woman.
Because
he's upset with himself that he couldn't do anything, and then Rorschach dies alone, and it's just sad. When you have Dan go out there, it changes the whole dynamic of that scene,
because he doesn't do anything.
He just goes out there and fucking screams, and then he goes inside and and he's like, we gotta keep fighting, and it doesn't
Yeah, it's like, it honestly, like, takes away from the emotion of the scene rather than adds to the emotion to the scene.
And it's also, I feel inconsistent of Dan's character as well. Because again, I think his masculinity issue is not solved because he didn't actually do anything at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's still as demasculated as he is in the beginning. Like, he has character growth, but that's not it. That part isn't.
Yeah, no, that part is like it's almost a regression, I think, into just like being the submissive like failure that he feels like he is.
Yeah, and like the same with like Laura Jupiter, like the fact that she goes to him again, like she's also stuck in a sort of loop where she was with Dr. Manhattan because, you know, it was like
cool and sexy and weird.
Yeah. After Dr. Manhattan became too inhuman, she was like, okay, I'll be now with this boy who I can boss around and stuff.
Yeah, it's like I think it's a need to establish herself as her own person.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but she only can do it through others, and probably she should do it by herself, not through other people. Yeah, it's like everyone is stuck in that loop. Like Rorschach dies because of it. He's like,
yeah,
like I can't agree with this. Like
I have to. He's like, I have to at least attempt to. Because
Rorschach actually goes through the most growth because in the beginning he says they'll look up to me and say help us, and he says he will say no, but in the end he's like, well, like
if no one else is going to, then I have to.
Yeah, so in some ways, like he goes through the most growth when it comes to his like problems. Not that he again fixes them; he doesn't. But yeah,
and then. Yeah, and then he fucking kicks the bucket. And it's fucking horrible as well. It's like a really horrible scene.
It is. It's like sad. And it's like,
it is sad. It's really like, sad because you feel really bad for him.
And it's not over the top sad. It's like just like...
It's just like upsetting, isn't it? Yeah. It's just like, man, poor guy. Yeah, it's a bad time.
It's a bad time.
I think that's like...
That's it, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's just too much superhero and not enough people in the movie.
Yeah.
And
that's basically
in a very big nutshell, that's it, I think.
Yeah.
It's not even, like, a terrible movie to watch. Because it's, like, it's still fun.
But yeah.
It's just not... No.
Also, yes. Okay, let's be clear on one thing before we go. This movie is not as terrible as some of Zack Snyder's other work. It's not even that terrible in its execution in general. But why it is bad is because it's compared to Watchmen, the comic book. Which
is this amazing work of literature.
Yeah, which...
And this isn't like an amazing... art film. This is just a really average or arguably below average superhero movie, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
I would say it's below average. It's not even in my top 10 superhero movies. So
I mean, sure.
Look, but, I like superhero movies and superheroes, so, you know, like...
Yeah. You've seen a lot more of them than I have, so...
So, yeah. Yeah.
Well... That's it for Watchmen.
That's it for Watchmen. Next time,
put him back on the shelf and watch him be a man.
Who watches the Watchmen, Kieran? Though.
I do.
Damn.
I'm gonna watch the movie tonight. I'm not. I'm not.
Yeah, you're not. Yeah, I know you're not. That's a lie. Anyway,
so
next time,
next week on Tom's.
Thomas and Takis.
We go on a road trip across the US of A with Neil Gaiman's American Gods.
Yes.
We
have a lot of feelings about.
Yeah, because I'm not finished reading it yet, but I'm nearly finished. My first impression is just that I'm like, it's okay. I don't love it, which like people really do. Like people love Neil Gaiman stuff, and like this is my second Neil Gaiman book, and I'm just like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, I think like Neil Gaiman is, I think, Patrick Rothfuss's favorite author.
Why?
You ask him. Ask him that. Or like, sure. Maybe not favorite, but like very like high up there. You know.
I mean, yeah. Some
he talks about really him like a lot. Him. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, George R. R. Martin really likes Neil Gaiman as well. And yeah. Like this.
No, I mean, I like him as a person.
Yeah. Me too. But I just mean like as like an author. I don't think either of us are like super impressed. I mean, you've read more Gaiman than I have.
I have read more Gaiman, but like, there's only one book of his I love,
and that's Ocean, right?
Ocean at the End of the Lane. But like, and I truly love that book. Like, that's probably in my top 10 novels.
Oh, okay. So you know he's capable of performing. Yeah.
No, but like.
But everything else of him I've read, I've disliked. So
did you actively disliked or just been like
for American Gods? But even rereading that now, I'm like, yeah, like, yeah. But for me, saying eh about an author is honestly worse than dislike. I take dislike more.
Okay.
Because although like dislike is an emotion.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't say I dislike him purely because I don't dislike American Gods. I do like it. Just don't.
It's fine.
I think it's good. I don't think it's great. Like, if we're like categorizing it.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Let's.
That's for next time.
Come back next week for another exciting episode of Terms and Talkies.
Oh, we should also quickly clarify that the season we're covering the first season of the show, which but we are reading the whole book.
Yeah. So get ready the first season of the show is not the whole book.
Yeah. If you're just a show watcher, there's going to be tons of spoilers for what happens later on in the book.
Yeah, probably.
So, I think so, because obviously the show's going to be like, it's going to like foreshadow to
and also we'll probably return once more seasons are out, right? Maybe.
I think it'll be harder to do like a whole episode again.
Yeah. Or maybe we might do a short or something. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's in the future. I don't know when the next season even is coming out. So
probably next year sometime.
Yeah. So that's it. And as always, send me nudes if you're The Witcher or Quoth. And goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone.